Nikki Strong, and this is VOA One The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Susan Shand. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Muslims around the world marked the start of Ramadan Tuesday. But a rise in COVID-19 cases has again placed limits on how they can observe the holy month. Ramadan is traditionally marked by longer prayers in crowded mosques. Muslims do not eat or drink from morning to night. The custom is meant to stop unhealthy habits and to feel closer to God. At the end of the day, they meet with friends and family to eat a big feast called the iftar. Last year, Islam's holiest month began during the start of the coronavirus pandemic. Many mosques have since reopened and restrictions have eased this year. However, crowded gatherings in mosques and large gatherings for meals remain banned. Mecca in Saudi Arabia is home of the Kaaba, Islam's holiest site. Limited numbers of people were permitted inside the Great Mosque of Mecca on Tuesday, which houses the Kaaba. Other Muslims could only pray towards the Kaaba 5 times a day. In Lebanon, plans for Ramadan had to change as the country faces the worst economic crisis in its history. Samaneh Al-Turk was at a busy outdoor market in Beirut. "We cannot buy anything. We ask how much the lettuce is, the cucumber, and the tomato," she said. "How we are going to get through the month of Ramadan, I don't know." Israel has permitted 10,000 vaccinated Palestinians to pray in Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque starting Friday. But a nighttime curfew in the crowded Gaza Strip restricted family gatherings as the virus continues to spread. Curfews remain in Iraq throughout Ramadan. Business owners and shops could operate, but only through home deliveries. Vaccinations are a challenge for Muslim nations giving shots throughout Ramadan. There is an Islamic teaching that Muslims should not put anything in the body during Ramadan between sunrise and sunset. But Indonesia's top religious leaders said that Muslims eligible for vaccinations are required to take the shots during Ramadan. Mosques are permitted to open for prayers with restrictions. People can hold iftar gatherings at 50% capacity. Anna Marjastuti lives in Indonesia's capital of Jakarta. "Easing restrictions is like a breath of fresh air for us who are tired of this COVID-19 outbreak," she said. "Yes, they should act to stop the virus, but not block the door to worship or change our tradition of Ramadan entirely."
The Crown is a popular television drama about the British royal family. One of the most important characters is Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth's husband. Several shows shine a light on Prince Philip, also known as the Duke of Edinburgh. They examine his life and his feelings about being a consort of the royal family. A consort is the marriage partner of a member of a royal family. Matt Smith played a young Prince Philip in the first two seasons, and Tobias Menzies played a middle-aged Philip in seasons 3 and 4. The real Prince Philip died Friday at age 99. The Philip in the TV show is seen being a cold father to his son, Prince Charles. The show also suggests Philip was unfaithful to his wife. But he is shown as a positive influence on Elizabeth and a man who loves his country. Peter Morgan is the creator of the Netflix show. He said the show is based on historical research and imagination. The truth of Philip's life in the royal family may never be fully known. But here are a few true things to compare to the show. The crown. Philip wants his children to take his last name, Mountbatten, and not the Queen's, Windsor. The answer is no. When Elizabeth becomes queen, Philip leaves the military. He and Elizabeth fight over his role in the royal family. He hates that he must kneel to his wife during the Queen's coronation. Philip later accepts his role as consort, and the two find a balance in their family and marriage. Real life. When Philip was not allowed to change the family name, he complained. In Giles Bradrath's book, Philip and Elizabeth, Portrait of a Royal Marriage, he was angry that he could not give the children his family name. "I am nothing but a bloody amoeba," he said. 8 years later, it was decided that his children and grandchildren would use both names. For example, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's son is named Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor. The Crown. In one episode, Philip is interested in the first moon landing. He watches the astronauts with great respect and thinks his life is boring by comparison. He meets the three American astronauts and tells them that his position and marriage kept him from the life he wanted. Real life. Philip lived a life of adventure. He fought in World War II, received medals, and became a first lieutenant in the Royal Navy. He learned to fly in the 1950s. He was a polo player, painter, art collector, and skilled sailor. He drove until the age of 97, when he crashed his car. I'm Brian Lynn.
American colleges and universities hope to return to pre-COVID life in the autumn. Some schools are urging students to get the vaccine, but others are wondering if they should or legally could require it. Colleges and universities that plan to return to in-person teaching have launched campaigns to get students vaccinated before the summer. Universities, including Rutgers, Brown, Cornell, and Northeastern, recently told students they must get vaccinated before returning to classes in the autumn. They hope to reach herd immunity among the student population. They believe it would permit them to lift space restrictions. It takes away any ambiguity about whether individuals should be vaccinated, said Kenneth Henderson. He is the head of Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. He added that making sure students are vaccinated will tell the surrounding town or city that we are taking all appropriate measures. Northeastern and other colleges requiring shots believe they have the legal right to demand students be vaccinated. It is not unusual for colleges to require students to be vaccinated for other diseases. Last year, a court let stand a flu shot requirement at the University of California. However, some colleges believe they cannot legally require vaccinations and are leaving the decisions to students. Officials at Virginia Tech University say they cannot legally require the vaccine because it has not been given full approval by the United States Food and Drug Administration. The FDA has only approved some vaccines for emergency use in the U.S. Legal experts say the COVID-19 vaccine's emergency use approval makes a legal claim more likely, and some colleges may not require the vaccine to avoid legal problems. Harvard Law professor Glenn Cohen teaches health law and bioethics. He argued there is no legal reason colleges would not be permitted to require COVID-19 vaccinations. It makes no difference that the shots have not been given full approval, he said. The problem is that there is no federal law or court decision that helps colleges and universities decide how to move forward. The biggest problems could come in states that have already banned or plan to ban any vaccine requirements, Cohen said. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this month banned all businesses from requiring anyone to show proof of vaccination. The order raises problems for Florida's Nova Southeastern University. It plans to require students, teachers, and professors to get vaccinated. The college president said he will respect the laws of our state and all federal directives. Texas also has a ban on vaccine requirements. And then there are other problems for schools that require the vaccine. Federal law says colleges must work with any student who refuses a vaccine for medical or religious reasons. Also, there is no widely accepted proof of vaccination paperwork. At Northeastern, officials are still deciding whether students will be asked to show some kind of vaccine record or just be asked if they have been vaccinated. We would expect students to be honest, Henderson said. American colleges are also struggling with what to expect of international students. Some may not have access to vaccines in their home countries, and some may not have access to vaccines approved for emergency use in the U.S. Several colleges say they are planning to make shots available for international students when they arrive. Northeastern student Tyler Lee said he thinks requiring vaccinations is the right move because it will help stop the virus spread and protect the community. Students agree with the decision, he said. It's Northeastern's decision, said Tyler Lee. If I didn't like it, I would transfer, and that's what most students feel, he added. I'm Susan Shand.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
A stunning and cowardly strike on the United States. The president vows the killers will pay for this attack on America.
The United States changed as a result of the September 11th terrorist attacks. CBS newsman Dan Rather expressed what many Americans were feeling.
You will remember this day as long as you live.
On the morning of that sunny September day that came to be known as 9/11, the nation came under attack from Al-Qaeda, an extremist group led by Osama bin Laden. Its targets were world-famous buildings representing America's economic and military power. Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked four American passenger airplanes. The hijackers were from Middle Eastern countries. Each group included a pilot trained to fly two kinds of Boeing airliners, the 757 and the 767. At 8:46 on that morning, one group of hijackers flew a Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. 17 minutes later, another group flew a second 767 into the Trade Center's South Tower. The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke into the air. The intense heat of the burning jet fuel from the planes caused structural failures that brought down both buildings. About an hour after the first plane hit the World Trade Center, another group of Al-Qaeda operatives flew a 757 airliner into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the Defense Department in Arlington, Virginia. The plane exploded against a wall of the huge building where more than 20,000 people worked. A fourth group had taken control of another 757, but some of the passengers on that flight, United 93, had heard about the terrorist attacks through phone calls to their families. Several passengers and crew members attempted to retake control of the plane. It crashed near the town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Investigators later said the hijackers probably planned to attack the Capitol, a major government building in Washington, D.C., where Congress meets. There was also concern that the White House could have been a target. The 9/11 attacks saw the worst loss of lives on American soil since Japan attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941. That attack caused the United States to enter World War II.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
As expressed by President George W. Bush on 9/11, the attacks left Americans in a state of shock and disbelief. But that was soon replaced by anger and a resolve that such events would not be allowed to happen again.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shattered steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve.
At Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center destruction, rescue efforts continued into the night. New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani was asked if Arab American or Muslim groups in New York might be targeted due to the nature of the attacks.
Just the opposite. They will receive extra protection. The particular individuals responsible and the groups responsible, that's up to law enforcement, and it's up to the United States government to figure out. And citizens of New York should, even if they have anger, which is understandable, it isn't their place to get involved in this. Then they're just participating in the kind of activity we just witnessed. And New Yorkers are not like that.
And Giuliani spoke of the strength of spirit of the people of his city.
People tonight should say a prayer for the people that we've lost and be grateful that we're all here. And tomorrow, New York is going to be here, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to be stronger than we were before.
On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
President Bush explained that the war on terror would be different from other wars.
Our response involves far more than instant retaliation and isolated strikes. Americans should not expect one battle, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen. We will starve terrorists of funding, turn them one against another, drive them from place to place, until there is no refuge or no rest. And we will pursue nations that provide aid or safe haven to terrorism. Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime.
President Bush demanded that the Taliban rulers of Afghanistan stop sheltering Osama bin Laden and surrender him. The president also called on the Taliban to close terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. The Taliban refused. They demanded evidence that Osama bin Laden had been involved in the attacks of 9/11. They said that if such evidence was provided, he would be tried in an Islamic court. The United States refused to provide evidence. On October 7th, the United States and Britain launched airstrikes against Taliban targets. What became known as the War on Terror had begun. Tribal groups from the opposition Northern Alliance led a ground attack. But suicide bombers had killed their leader, Ahmad Shah Massoud, on September 9th, 2 days before the 9/11 attacks. By November, Taliban control began to collapse in several provinces. Taliban forces fled Kabul, the capital. But the ouster of the Taliban government did not mean the end of the war on terror. Some of President Bush's advisors had long supported an invasion of Iraq. As early as October 2001, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld suggested that military action against Iraq was possible. Government officials accused Iraq of having links to terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. They noted that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons. And they said he was seeking to develop biological and nuclear weapons as well. In October 2001, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. This law provided the government with more power to gather information about suspected terrorists in the United States. Critics said the law invaded constitutional rights to privacy. Civil liberties groups said the Patriot Act gave law enforcement and other agencies too much power. In January 2002, President Bush gave his State of the Union report to Congress. He accused some nations of supporting terrorist organizations. He said the United States would not wait to be attacked by such groups. Instead, it would strike first at the countries that sheltered them. The president identified three nations, North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, as supporters of terror.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world. By seeking weapons of mass destruction, these regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred.
In 2002, the United States opened a detention center at its naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Some of the fighters arrested in Afghanistan were sent there. They were not considered prisoners of war. Instead, the detainees were treated as unlawful enemy combatants. As such, the Bush administration said they did not have the same rights as war prisoners under international treaties. In the United States, the government also detained some foreign citizens, mostly for violating immigration laws. No terrorism charges were brought against these detainees. Human rights activists and some legal experts protested the detentions. After 9/11, government agencies were criticized for failing to prevent the terrorist attacks. Critics said the agencies should have been working together to gather intelligence. Government officials said part of the issue involved legal restrictions on the gathering and sharing of intelligence. In January 2003, the Department of Homeland Security opened for business.
Maybe you see something suspicious, but you don't want to get involved. It's nothing, you think. Can you be sure?
There was a lot to do.
If you see something, say something. Report suspicious activity to local authorities.
Transportation security, immigration, law enforcement, border protection. It represented the biggest government reorganization in more than half a century. All or part of 22 federal agencies and departments were combined into the new agency. Its job, to keep America safe in a world that had changed in a single day. The War on Terror, which began after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States, escalated in March 2003, when a coalition of American-led forces invaded Iraq. The mission, as stated by President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair, was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.